Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Don't you just love this time of year? The sun is shining a little bit more. The weather is warmer and more pleasant. And oh, the colors, green grass and leaves on the trees, yellow, blue, red, purple, and orange. It's springtime and time to get outside and plant. You probably have already, but maybe you're talking about a vegetable garden and this may be the weekend to do it. Maintain the plant growth in your yard and around your home or think about gardening. Today is a Smart Talk designated for answering all questions having to do with spring planting and gardening. Joining us, as always, is Erica Jo Schaefer, nursery manager at Highland Gardens in Camp Hill. Erica Jo, how are you?
I'm fantastic, Scott. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. Couldn't you tell by that introduction that I'm doing very well?
You are. You're doing well. It's probably because you're getting ready to taste this sweetie pesto.
Well, before I do that, let me tell our listeners at home that this is the program that if you're looking to plant a vegetable garden, if you're looking to maintain your flowers, you're looking for something different to plant, anything green, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Get in early because the phones do get busy, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number is 1-800-729-7532. And I'll say this right up front, too. During this program, we ask you to send photographs to us of your gardens, of your flower beds, anything that you'd want to send us a photograph of, do that by sending it to WITF's Facebook page, 1-800-729-7532. All right, before we take our first questions or talk about, what we're going to talk about, what do you have here for me?
I've got some weed pesto for you today,
weed
Scott.
Weed pesto.
Because, you know, one of my favorite parts of spring really has become making you eat dandelions.
I know. And making me is...
I do. Well, yeah. And you're forced to do it. I mean, we're on the air. I mean, even if people can't see, we're going to take pictures. There'll be evidence.
It is peer pressure. Mm-hmm. What would happen if I would say no?
You won't.
I know I won't, because I will say this. The dandelion salads that you've brought in the past that I won't say I didn't like them, but the dandelions are kind of bitter. But this one really smells good. What is it?
It's dandelion and chickweed pesto. So there's Parmesan cheese, garlic, almonds, turmeric, olive oil. It's garnished with wild violets. So it's a three-weed pesto, actually.
A three-weed pesto. So you call this a three-weed salad, right?
Yep, sure.
Okay, yeah. Let me try some right now. Can you, because I can't reach that, can you put some a little bit on, on a cracker? I'll take a bite. And while we're doing that, let's take a phone call. Can you do two things at once like that?
I am so multi-talented, Scott.
All right, let's take a call from Jake in Lancaster while Erica is preparing this three-weed pesto. Jake, you're on the air.
Hi there. We have some beds around our house that just never seem to take, and my suspicion is the soil is no good and needs amended. And I'm just curious what the best way to get that tested is and then figure out how to improve the soil.
So Penn State does a really nice soil test that will tell you your nutrients, so you can start with that. They're about $15. Garden centers usually have them, or the courthouse, whatever county you're in, the courthouse usually has it too, a cooperative extension thing. As far as the health of your soil for texture, then you can always add compost in there. There's gypsum, which is something that helps break up clay. And pick plants that aren't as fussy can also be helpful.
All right, plants that aren't as fussy. Sorry, I'm speaking with my mouth full.
Mouthful of what? Dandelion, three-weed pesto.
Salad, which is very good, by the way.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
So plants that don't take a lot of effort.
Right. Well, a lot of that has to do with, is it sunny? Is it shady? Does it stay dry? Does it stay wet? And all of the plants all have their cultural needs. And if you follow along with what the spot requires, then you can pick a plant that's going to be happy in that spot, instead of, like, azaleas are like spoiled children. So if you don't give them exactly the spot that they want, then they're going to suffer and get lace bugs and all kinds of.
Jake, what do you have planted out there?
We've tried pastas. We've tried, kind of blank on everything. We've tried a number of things.
Is it sunny or shady, Jake? Is it sunny or shady?
It's mostly shady.
Okay. Is it shady because of a large tree, or is it shady because of the house, or what?
Yeah, large tree. large tree and then house.
Okay, so the large tree makes it not only shady but dry. So then you have to move to perennials and shrubs that like dry shade, which really squirrels down your crayon box and like what kind of choices you would have. There are things that do dry shade, and hostas usually do, so you can amend the soil in those spaces with compost. There's also Bishop's Hat is one that will do dry shade. Hellebores do dry shade. And, you know, water them during the summertime, certainly. They'll do it. Right. It doesn't mean they're super happy about it.
Hey, Jake.
One thing that has done okay is boxwoods, large boxwoods.
Boxwoods have done well?
They've done okay. They're not thriving, but they're alive.
Yeah, that's kind of, they usually like a moister soil, so that's kind of a odd clue to have that they're doing fine.
Mm. Hey, thank you very much for your call, Jake. Yeah, we had a similar question from a listener. Says, the front of my house faces north. It's a real challenge to get anything to grow directly in front of the house. Even tulips and daffodils won't bloom, even though the front of the house gets sufficient water and it's mulched. This isn't a problem for the neighbor's homes facing north. Do I just have bad soil? What can I do about it?
Well, again, the soil, absolutely, the soil is your number one concern whenever you're doing any kind of gardening, plus the sunshade aspect, certainly. So whoever this, what's this person?
Didn't have a name.
Okay. So definitely check and see. A quick way you can tell if your soil's like crappy, which in Pennsylvania usually means heavy clay, is dig a hole about the size of a mop bucket and fill it up with water. And then see how long it takes for that water to drain out. Like if it's still there 2 hours later and mostly gone, it's probably not a clay problem. If it's still there at night when you get ready to go to bed, then you've got a drainage problem. You'll need to do more compost and more things to help cause drainage to happen.
Compost with what?
Compost, leaf compost actually is the best. You can buy all sorts of products, and we as Americans, or at least in our area, we put all of our leaves out at the curb so that they can go to the trash, and then we buy peat moss. It's just like there's a disconnect there. So you can use your own leaves chopped up as your own soil amendment, and or you can buy bag products of the same.
We have an email here. Ask, I miss having impatiens planted in the flower beds. What's the status of the fungus that kills this plant? Has the danger passed? Are there new shady varieties available?
Yeah, so the danger is past. I tried myself, it was downy mildew, and I tried last year, I tried 4 6-packs in my own garden, and that was the first year they didn't collapse for 5 years now. So what we need to know about that, though, is that we don't all spaz out and start planting flats and flats of impatiens again, or the downy mildew fungus is just going to rise up again, and we're going to be without them also. So I would recommend that you try doing some impatiens and still mix in wax begonias, still mix in coleus. Because of the impatient thing that happened, there were a lot of hybridizing options that went on to give us different choices for shady areas.
So you even have problems sometimes.
Yes, I know. Isn't that crazy?
It
even
really
with my
is.
Bright green thumbs, I still am a gardener.
So the fungus defeated Erica.
Yeah, it was pretty devastating. It's pretty sad. I came back from a vacation in Maine and all my impatiens were just flat on the ground. I was like, oh my gosh. Well, it's an airborne thing, so it didn't go around my house.
Okay, I'm going to stop here for just a second and say that is very, very good. In fact, I'm going to ask for more here
what?
In just a second. That is very, very good.
Lamar's eating weeds, everybody. Lawn weeds.
But that, I don't know what I taste the most. And there's the violets on top. And someone asked before you came in whether that was a garnish. And you said, no, that is...
That's an edible flower. Yeah, your wild violets are edible flowers. Absolutely. Absolutely. And... this weekend I'm going to make wild violet jelly, which I was hoping to have some of that for you, and I ran out of time yesterday.
Well, yeah. One thing you also mentioned in the past when you've been here, you've picked the dandelions the day of. Mm-hmm. I understand you picked this yesterday.
Yeah, I did because it's a pesto. I wanted all of the flavors to get where they needed to get. So with pesto, it's, you know, an overnight in the refrigerator can make a really great difference on the depth of the flavor.
I was just concerned that I didn't have fresh weeds.
Oh, Scott, you're... You're fresh, for sure.
I'm serious. I want another cracker here in a second. We have we had a call from Linda who suggested we discuss plants that support pollination and insects, bees, et cetera. Name a book or two for reference and usefulness. We actually had another email asking the same question. I want to plant some pollinators around the yard. What's the best?
So there's for pollinators, it kind of depends on like what pollinators are you attempting to attract. You know, monarch butterflies are exclusive to butterfly weed, and that Latin name of that is Asclepias, which with an A. And so there's two different types of Asclepias that are more garden worthy, and one of them is Asclepias tuberosa, which gives like sun and drier soils. It gets orange or yellow flowers. And then there's a taller one, which is Asclepias incarnata, which gets pink or white flowers. There's some other ones coming that are in the Asclepias line that are spreaders that aren't really, for especially in a smaller garden, they'll take off. And so we're not going to sell. Can't speak about where I work. And I almost did.
She works at Highlands Gardens. High Gardens. I'm sorry. You're going to be busy this weekend,
I know,
by the way.
Right,
but go
right,
ahead.
Exactly. And so that, and for bees, you know, to let your clovers. Most of the stuff with the pollinators, as far as I'm concerned, is like we need to stop putting down so many weed killers, which is why I serve Scott dandelions. You know, to see the value in that as a food and as a pollinator friendly thing. Dandelions themselves, the flowers, attract so many different pollinators. So not using chemicals in your garden is the absolute first thing you can do to bring more pollinators in. Having a little water source, even if it's just a low bowl with some stones and water in it. And then hyssops, agastaches, they attract bees like crazy. Thyme, creeping thyme, attracts bees like crazy. Monardas for hummingbirds. Phlox for hummingbirds and butterflies. There's so many. There's so many.
Mm. I've seen a lot of pictures here in the last week or so of people with hummingbirds.
They've arrived already.
Finally, yeah.
Yeah, the boys come first, actually, about 3 weeks before the girls, I understand, and scope out a nest site.
Kristen from Fayetteville asked, what should we do to get rid of groundhogs and rabbits? Last year, we lost about $700 in our vegetable garden because these critters ate it all. We have a fence, but the groundhogs dig under it, and then the rabbits use those holes to get in, too. We set traps for them, but they don't fall for it.
Oh, my goodness. They're such jerks, aren't they? So to keep the groundhogs from going, even though you've got your fence, what you're going to have to do is actually fence down into the ground further. You're going to have to go in like 18 inches and use like metal stakes to keep it so they can't push it out. And there are have a heart traps, they're called, that you can maybe you've already tried them, because they can sniff out that they know that you're about to catch them or something. I use myself, I'm using dried blood, which is also a fertilizer for a repellent, because my rabbits also got a little bit too frisky and abundant in my garden, and they're eating even my irises, which are poisonous. I don't understand that. The repellents, the different repellents around, and also fencing deeper into the ground, actually do a trench and fence in deeper.
I was curious when you said dry blood. You know, a lot of people that do use dry blood, but mothballs, heard people use mothballs.
Yeah, well, mothballs, yes, and except sometimes kids, when they see that round, they think they're candy.
Yeah,
that would be poisonous. So if you're going to do the mothball trick, then you would use flakes. Most of the repellents that are for sale specifically for animals also last longer than mothballs will.
Okay.
For a scent.
Allison in York says, I have a butterfly bush that I want to get rid of. What can I replace it with? The space is about 5x5 under a window and next to a deck. It's pretty much full sun. Some have suggested winterberry or serviceberry. Your thoughts?
Winterberries would. You have to have the male and the female in order to get the berries, and most of the winterberries do like 8 feet tall and 8 feet wide. So that's going to go over your 5x5. If you're trying to get rid of the butterfly bush because it's seeding, there are new seedless butterfly bushes, Flutterby series, and also there's a series Miss Molly, Miss Ruby, Miss Violet. So you could try those. And even in full sun, the PG hydrangeas tend to still put up with that as long as you do a lot of compost in your soil. So you could try Fire and Ice PG hydrangea or Sweet Summer hydrangea, PG hydrangea.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR news and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Joining us today is Erica Jo Schaefer, nursery manager at Highland Gardens in Camp Hill, answering your gardening questions. If you have a question, I almost choked right there.
No. Well, it's because you're eating those dandelions so fast, Scott. It is. Slow down. Slow down and savor.
1-800-729-7532 is the number to call, or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. Leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. And again, we ask for your photographs. We know you have some beautiful flowers out in the lawn, out in the yard this year. Give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send photographs and let us know what it is. And, where you live, that kind of thing, to WITF's Facebook page. Let's take a call from Lenore in Millersville. Lenore, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Every year I think I'm going to compost, and then I don't. this year I started, I had a 5-gallon bucket, and I was putting away my food waste in there. But I don't have a large area. Like, I live in a townhome, and... I don't have a lot of the leaves, the brown compost matter. So I was wondering, do you have any suggestions for, like, the simplest way possible to just, be good with my food waste? Or are there any, like, composting collectives around here in Lancaster where I could just drop it off?
I don't know about compost collectives, and I do have an answer for you because I'm doing it myself. So if you take all your food scraps, which hopefully are organic food scraps, because that's even better then, and you put them in a big freezer Ziploc bag, and until the bag's full. And then once the bag is full, make organic vegetable broth with it, right? And then the peelings at that point have been frozen and boiled, so they'll break down so much faster in your soil. So now you can take that, like, strain them out, so you've got your broth, you've got your strainer full of vegetable peelings, pieces, all, and actually go just put it, like, dig a hole and put it in your soil. And then it'll fit. I mean, it's already nearly composted, and then it'll enrich the soil in that spot. And then you can just keep moving around and just burying, really, and it'll enrich your soil in that way.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And what about moldy vegetables? Like, if I get a moldy tomato or something, can I do the same thing?
I would probably just go right and bury that and not try to, turn that into something that you're going to eat.
All right. Thank you.
Sorry, I meant, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your call. When you talk about food scraps, are there any foods that you shouldn't compost?
We should never do any of the meats or any of the fats or anything like that, because then you're going to attract critters,
right.
Animals, mice, whatever. Mm-hmm. And any vegetable, even your avocado pits, if you're an avocado eater, have more nutrients in them than the avocados themselves. So my avocado pits also go in that freezer bag to, like, nutrient.
Jody is in Chambersburg. Jody, you're on the air.
Hi. We just moved to the area from Virginia last summer, and we have a new house that doesn't have any landscaping at all. The front of the house is western-facing, doesn't get a lot of sun. I noticed in the winter it's very wet. So do you have any suggestions on what we could plant in that area?
It's always wet or only in the winter?
When it gets a lot of rain, it's wet. It does dry out.
Okay. Like, fast, or it stays stoppy for a while, like you can't mow out there?
No, it dries out, like, within a day.
Okay. Well, for things for wet, like, you'll have trouble finding evergreens that are going to be enjoying that. The ones, plants, though, that lose their leaves, you could do summer sweet, you could do sweet spire, you could do winter berries. There's all kinds of ferns you can do, Joe Pye weed, lobelia. For a tree, a sweet bay magnolia or a black gum tree all enjoy that extra moisture wetness.
Okay, great. And those do well in, like, a partial sun?
Yep.
Awesome.
Thank you very much for your call. We have an email from Sharon to ask, can you use grass clippings as mulch? I know that you mentioned leaves are okay, but I wonder about grass. I also wonder if a small cup of vinegar would keep away rabbits. Love the gardening shows.
I'm not sure about the vinegar. Maybe. I guess you'd have to test that out. I haven't heard that yet, and it seems like that strong smell might work for some time. Maybe in a bowl to keep it concentrated, the fragrance concentrated. As far as grass clippings, yes, you can use it as mulch. I do it in my vegetable garden. The trick there is not to do it too thick, because as it starts to break down, the grass clippings heat up, so you could burn your top roots, and only if you're doing an organic garden, because if you've used weed killer on your garden and you try to use those grass clippings as a mulch, then you're going to be putting weed killer on your perennials or your vegetable garden or whatever, and you may have adverse effects because of that.
Let's take a call. We have someone, I think it's a friend of yours, Jennifer from Enola, is calling in about her green worms. Jennifer, are you a friend of
Hi.
Erica's? Hi.
Yes, I'm a friend of Erica's.
Okay.
Hi. Hi, honey. Mike called me and told me I needed to turn on the show because you were on, so I did. And I thought, this is the opportunity to ask.
Yes.
So just last night I went out in my gardens to check and see if the regular green worms that I get every year on my columbine were back, and of course they were. Mm-hmm. Not quite as strong as they've been in the past, but I'm wondering if you have any suggestions, natural, I'd rather not use chemical, but is there a way to keep them away other than just doing what I'm doing, which is going out and pulling them off by hand?
Well, that's certainly an organic method. And then you could do, there's a dust called Dipel, D-I-P-E-L, which is BT, Bacillus thunbergiensis. And that is a caterpillar killer with no effect to any other insects or birds or anything like that.
Okay.
Hey, Jennifer. I just wanted to add something here that you said your husband told you that Erica was on today, so you had to listen?
Yeah, he gave me a call, and he was like, hey, Erica's show is on. It's not her show, but
I know.
She's on today doing her garden thing, and I love gardening, and I love Erica, and I like to listen to her whenever I get a chance on
this
show.
Well, you should listen every day. That's the only point I'm going to make.
Oh, well, we listen as often as we can.
Okay. Scott, are you getting jealous?
I don't always remember to turn
Have
on the radio.
Have someone pesto baby.
NPR's on in our car
okay.
all the time.
So. All right. I just wanted to make sure. Hey, thank you very much for your call. Yeah, I am.
Hey,
it's
don't get
show.
Jealous. Sorry.
Erica's show.
Hey,
right.
Did you enjoy that pesto?
I did. That is excellent. Yeah. Let me see what else we have here. Crystal asks, where does the dry blood come from?
Cows. It's a byproduct. Yep. It's animal blood.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And if you're asking, okay, that was the literal where it comes from, but maybe she wants to know where you can buy it. Anywhere?
The company that sells Espoma, Espoma, is who packages it dry, obviously. And it is in a lot of repellent products. Like mm-hmm. if you're looking to repel anything, often you'll find dried blood is one of the ingredients, or egg solids is one of the ingredients, garlic, clove oil, like they put all these smelly things in. So I guess for when I'm using the dried blood, it like freaks the rabbits out because they don't like, why is that smell here? You know, so off they go.
How do you know they're freaked out?
I'm just assuming.
Okay.
But they're not in my yard. Maybe. Like, ever since I started putting them in, I've seen one instead of the six that I could see every time that were laughing at me.
I was, like, picturing them jumping in the air
or something
like that. We have some open lines right now if you'd like to ask a question. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. And again, we're asking for your photographs. Send us your beautiful photographs today. Who knows? It may end up being part of WITF's web post, but send it to WITF's Facebook page. Every year, we've gotten some great-looking pictures, and we'd like to keep that going this year. 1-800-729-7532. A couple other questions, emails. How far to plant a dogwood tree away from the house?
So that will depend on if it's the native dogwood or the Chinese dogwood. The native dogwood gets about 15 feet wide, so that means you've got to be 8 to 9 feet away from the house so that it doesn't run into the house. The Chinese dogwoods can get 25 feet wide, so then that means you're going to have to be 13, 14, 15 feet even away from the house
mm-hmm.
so it doesn't run in.
Is that on the label when you buy the tree?
If you're shopping at Better Garden Centers, that's the information you're going to find on our labels, absolutely, mm-hmm. or from us.
Another question: mm-hmm. When is it time to trim mature trees?
Well, that too is going to depend on what type of trees they are. Some of them are bleeders, they say, like maple trees. When you cut them in the spring, that's where maple syrup comes from, specifically from a sugar maple. And all maples can do that bleeding. Birch trees can do a bleeding. So often those things are done in the wintertime because you can really see the structure of the tree, and certainly absolutely no cutting back the way people cut them back underneath the power lines.
Yeah.
And or just cut them back. Sometimes it's like a big open field and I have no idea why the term is heading them back. Like they chop them 1/3 of the way back, and it actually creates weak branches because then those wounds are exposed to rain and water and they start to rot down in.
Well, so but there are times when there's wires that you have to cut them back.
Well, right. And right. So that, and then we all get mad at the power companies because they cut the trees back, and really it's whoever planted the tree, you know, 50 years ago that didn't look up.
Well, what if the lines weren't there?
Well, maybe they weren't. Maybe they were.
Okay.
And people still do it though. People, like, they'll go through and cut the trees, head them back, and then they plant another tree right under the power line again. Mm. So your tree's going to be cut back.
Let's take a call from Jana in York. It is Jana, right?
Yes. Okay. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, Jana.
We listen almost every day.
Well, good. Thank you.
See, now you created fear, Scott. Way to go.
Go ahead.
I wanted to let you know, and I missed the first part of the program, so I apologize if you've already mentioned this, but we do organic gardening.
Yay.
At our home, and for our borders, instead of fencing or anything like that, or chemicals or dried blood, which I've never heard of, we have been using lavender, rosemary, and marigolds, and it works amazing.
Yep, beautiful. So, thank you. Yes. Yep.
Yeah. So we lined my quick little example is that we put in a bunch of beans. A couple, 50-foot rows of beans, and I lined the beans on either side with marigolds, and I'd run out of marigolds about 20 feet before the end of my row. And wouldn't you know, as soon as those beans came up, they were sawed off down to the stalk. But everything else that were lined with the marigolds, we had a wonderful crop the entire year.
So did you use the stinkier French marigolds, like the ones that have the real strong fragrance, or just marigolds in general? Did
I
that
just use straight up marigolds? There
That's
were some
awesome.
Tall ones, there were some small ones,
mm-hmm.
I just got them at Stouffer's, just a little pack. At the end of the season, then we picked the flowers once they dried, and then collected the seed, and we had mason jars full, so that's what we just put in over the past couple of days to replant. Hopefully
that's fantastic.
Back. Crossing fingers.
Thank you.
So, yeah.
Thank you for your call. I love marigolds.
Yeah, for sure. Marigolds are sturdy, they're strong, and they're also, it's nice to plant flowers in your vegetable garden just to bring in more insects and more pollinators.
Mm-hmm. By the way, we had someone who reminded us, Colleen, from Camp Hill, reminded us that mothballs are illegal outside.
Are they?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. I didn't know that either.
And there you go. Thank you, dear, for that information. Well,
probably just
exactly. So the kids don't pick them up and put them in their mouths.
That's
awesome. Thank you, Colleen.
Or there could be environmental reasons as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go to Bernadette in Camp Hill. Bernadette, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to ask Erica's advice. I have a stand of hemlock trees along a border of my property, half a dozen of them. And tree number two, one of the largest in the stand, died.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what you would suggest as a replacement for it, either, of course, just another tree, which will be so much smaller, or do you have some other idea or suggestion?
Well, because the hemlocks have been getting attacked by an insect called a woolly adelgid, especially up north of us in Connecticut, they really were devastated. So they are using up there, and I am suggesting also, there's an arborvitae that's called a green giant. And it's not the very skinny, upright, pedestrian-ish. It's more of a triangular type. It looks more like a hemlock in shape. It grows 2 to 3 feet a year. It'll do full sun, probably down to about 6 hours of sun, and it should mix in really nice with the hemlocks. The texture will be nice, and the size will be comparable. Yep.
You have them at Highland?
Yep, we sure do.
All right, thank you very much for your call. Pedestrianish?
Yeah.
Is that a word you use often?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's a horticultural term I've picked up myself. Thank you very much.
Marie in Lancaster says, does a product like Preen have any negative effect on bees or other animals? My neighbor's weeds are a problem every year.
I don't know how to answer that. I'm not sure that it has an effect on pollinators. It does stop seeds from germinating. It doesn't kill any existing plants. It is a chemical, so certainly the chance is there that it does have some effect because it's a chemical. You can use also corn gluten, which doesn't last as long as Preen. You have to apply it more often, and that is made from corn, so that would be an organic alternative. And both products have to go down before the weeds start up, because they don't kill anything. They just stop seeds from germinating, the seeds that blow in.
You know, neighbors' weeds... When the neighbor,
I know, right?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot you can do about that.
No, no. You sneak out at night.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've actually thought about it. John is in Lancaster. John, you're on the air.
Hey, Scott. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Good. So here's my question. I'm not very horticulturally inclined. Hopefully your guests can help me out. We have about a 20-foot tall pine or spruce tree. It's kind of bushy. But the problem is it's not bushy at all. It looks like it's dead. But every year, the very tippy tips spring out maybe like 2 inches on every one of the branches, the million branches that are on it. They come on, but the rest of it looks like it's dead. It's clearly not happy. And I'm wondering if there's anything I can do to make it happy, or if I should cut it down and plant something else there. What would the advice be?
Well, not knowing exactly what tree you have, I'm going to assume it's one called a Douglas fir, and the Douglas firs are doing what you're describing. Like, it shoots out that new growth, and it's just getting thinner looking and thinner. Like, you can tell, just like you said, it's just not happy. So the it has a fungus. Again, if I'm, you know, have the right tree, it has a fungus called Rob decline, and it's going down. So that you can pay somebody to spray it, and it's still going down. So I would say get out the chainsaw, say thank you for your life, tree, and start off with something new.
How big is it? How tall is it? I think you mentioned, but I didn't catch it.
It's tall. It's probably 20 feet tall. It's probably about a 20-year-old tree, I guess.
Yeah. you'd probably do well to get a tree company on the property to actually see it in person, or you can bring a sample down to us or a picture to us, and I can confirm or deny.
Okay, John, thank you very much for your call. Let's take a call from Charles in Enola. Charles, you're on the air. Hey, Charles? Did I lose Charles here? Maybe. Charles, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. I hit the wrong button.
Okay. I started composting religiously for 1 or 2 seasons, and then I never used the compost. I composted in I put the scraps in about a 50-gallon garbage can, heavy-duty plastic garbage can, and then I sealed it, and it's been sealed for about 2 years, and I want to know, what can I do with it?
Oh, my goodness. Did you have holes in the garbage can? You're saying it's heavy-duty, but did you put holes in it so that the air could come in?
No.
Okay, so when you're composting in that manner, one of the things that's your best friend as a composting product finish is that there's air spaces there so the air can come in. There's 2 ways to compost. Okay. Aerobic, which is with air, or anaerobic, which is what you did with no air, which usually ends up in a stinky, slappy mess. So 2 years down the road, I'm afraid for you to lift up your lid and see what's in there. And I would say just go ahead and use it. Like put it on wherever, you know, any place where you would be buying peat moss or compost or whatever, just get it dumped out. And if you're going to continue, use a half an inch drill bit and get some holes, multiple holes put in that thing, and then start again.
All right.
Okay, nothing will explode when I open it, though. I'm going to say
after 2 years, if it was going to explode, it would have by now. Yeah.
Wear some safety glasses.
Yeah, some safety glasses, exactly.
All right, thank you very much for your call. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. All right, Eric and I were just talking a little bit about my plans for this afternoon. I haven't put a fence around the garden yet.
Around your vegetable garden?
Yeah, around the vegetable
garden. Well, and if you don't fence it, then you're taking your chance. Or, again, I really liked, I think it was Colleen's,
I like
you know,
to
use the plants, you know, so you don't have the fence.
I like that, too, because we have rabbits all over the place. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you said six in your yard?
Yeah.
I can see 8 to 10.
Yeah, I've started to, actually, one of the things to help with that is I've started to limb up from beneath, from the ground up underneath my evergreen shrubs so they don't have cover. Mm. You know, to make them be a little bit less comfortable. And my neighbor wouldn't agree, but we have a Cooper's hawk, and we've got some hawks who usually pick off her birds, which is really super sad. And, you know, there's different predators that can't find the rabbits if they're safely tucked under. Mm. So I've started to lift up some of those shrubs and make it a little bit less cover.
You said it with a smile on your face.
It's like me against the rabbits at
it
this
is.
Point.
Michael asked, what's the best way to plant and take care of tomatoes to have a healthy plant and plentiful harvest all summer?
So the first thing is going to be your soil. Like, what are the nutrients in your soil? Be careful not to hit them with too much nitrogen, because then they're going to grow really super fast at the expense of the tomatoes. And, of course, as the season goes on, they're falling all over them, all over the place. One of the things, the biggest concern that people come with is the black blossom rot, whenever the bottom of your tomato is black. And that is two things. One, you don't have enough calcium in your soil, which you find out from a soil test. The same soil test we talked about, Penn State does a really great one. And overwatering and underwatering, which a lot of times can be prevented if your soil is really good. So if you forget to water and then you flood it, you're just like, oh no, my tomatoes. And then you forget to water and you flood it, like that's increasing the likelihood of getting the blossom end rot. So more organic fertilizers, so they're eating like little meals instead of chemical fertilizers when you smack them. And then it's like they're on crack, you know, no, give me some more. Because there's no long-lasting quality to the chemical fertilizers.
How do you know when you're overwatering? My wife constantly saying, you're giving too much water. Of course, she doesn't do it quite in that voice, but I'm just exaggerating.
Oh, yeah, I hope she's going to tell you about that.
Oh, she will. She will,
yeah. Good deal. So underwatering and overwatering give the same symptom. They wilt.
Okay.
Because when you overwater, you fill the air spaces in the soil, and then your plant can't breathe. And because it can't breathe, it also wilts. You drown.
Yeah,
exactly.
Eileen from Camp Hill asked, last year I planted a pollinator garden, including 3 milkweed plants. Mm-hmm. The monarch caterpillar showed up in mass, but so did the aphids. They overwhelmed the milkweed, and many of the caterpillars never emerged from their chrysalis. How can I prevent an aphid invasion this year? If they do show up again, how can I deal with the aphids without harming the caterpillars?
Yeah, so monarch caterpillars love butterfly weed. So if you're planting butterfly weed, you're going to have caterpillars that are going to eat them. So you have to, you can plant more. You can also plant parsley they like, fennel. It's usually more swallowtails than monarch butterflies. As far as the aphids, I go out with my fingers and squish. I mean, that is the quickest way, you can, with gloves, without. I mean, I'm just smashing them now. And
I'm sitting aside of you on this show I've never seen before.
Just, right? Exactly. You thought it was all rainbows and
roses,
didn't
exactly
you?
Right, yeah,
exactly. Sometimes you got to be vicious, man. So I would be smashed. And the other thing is, watch for ladybugs, because ladybug larvae can eat 1,000 aphids a day. You can buy ladybugs. We just got in a huge shipment of them. Yeah, you can buy them in little containers, and they stay as long as they have a food source. Of course, if there's nothing to eat there, they just fly off looking for food. So if you have a heavy infestation, like getting some ladybugs in there would be a huge help for aphid infestation, or again, smash their little heads in.
Do people actually farm ladybugs?
Yeah, they do, yeah.
Didn't know that. Stacy from Humbleston asked, could Erica give some ideas for annual combinations planted in containers?
Oh, yeah. I can give many, many, many. Right now, I'm a huge fan. We've got some really hot-looking salvias, some tropical salvias that are different than the normal ones that you would get. So those million bells, I've totally fallen in love with million bells. There's Bidens, Bidens, which is really a sun lover. My favorite shade plant is nonstop begonias, and I love that with Terrinia. There's all sorts. I mean, I would go on and on about that. If you come in and let me know what, if you're in a sunny or shady and what color, then I'll run amok with you.
Okay. Erica running amok. By the way, I'm going to have to send an email here because I haven't heard whether we're receiving any photographs. So I want to make sure that we're getting some photographs.
Yeah, let's see your gardens.
Yeah, send them to WITS Facebook page so everyone can enjoy them. Let's go to Jim in Edders. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a asparagus bed that's at least 7 years old.
Nice.
And 3 and 4 years ago, it produced just tremendously. I did the normal thing. I didn't harvest it for 2 years. Then after that, I only took things that were above the size of a pencil, but I took it all as I was advised last year, and it's looking like the same thing this year. I'm getting very little growth, very spindly, hardly coming up at all. I made sure I fertilized in the fall, and I fertilized this spring. So any ideas?
What are you fertilizing with, first of all?
Just a regular plant fertilizer.
Like an organic?
Don't ask me the numbers offhand.
No, I don't need the numbers. Like in my own asparagus bed, I use composted cow manure, and I top dress with that and let it like kind of like compost tea all winter long. And then,
yeah.
I do the same thing again in the spring. If your roots are dying, I would say you've got to check into two things. One, if your area is wet, it would cause the asparagus to start rotting. And two, if you've got those darn voles, then they would be underneath.
We have a lot of them.
Yep, then they would be underneath chewing on the roots. So I would suggest you get a vole chaser. Sometimes people use poisons, but what the problem with the poisons is that as the vole is on the surface doing the tuna, you know, like, then that's what catches the attention of cats, foxes, hawks, and now you've poisoned a second being that you didn't mean to poison. So these sound chasers, we got some in last year that are actually solar. So you can put those in the ground, and they do this sound. Scott, get ready to laugh. So it goes, and then it's about 30 seconds, and it does again.
An environmental education, so I don't like to put any poison.
Right, exactly.
So these sound things,
their sound sense is so strong that these things you just plant it right in the ground, and then again, the solar piece is up, so it continues to charge its own self, and it goes like every 30 seconds it makes that noise and it chases them out. So of course your neighbors, if they're all going to your neighbors, one does a quarter of an acre.
Oh, wow. That's
yeah,
really good.
Exactly. And I think they're like $25. And yeah, I mean, they last all season. And into the second season I am with them.
There's a pair of red-shouldered hawks hanging around this place.
Oh, so
that's
lucky.
That's what they eat. So.
Yay. Well, that'll chase them up and out so then the hawks can eat more.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. Now, these things that make noise, do they have lights? Do they illuminate?
No, they don't, because the voles can't, they don't really have a sense of vision so much as their sense of smell, or it's not smell, of sound. So the
Well, I wasn't concerned about the voles. I was concerned about, I wonder.
You mean the appearance and what they look like?
Yeah.
No. They're, you plant them in the ground. They look like a giant pencil sort of thing.
Okay.
And you plant it in the ground. So the only thing that's at the top that you yourself can actually see is this little solar grid that's about a 3x3 inch square that's black.
Okay.
So it just nestles right in. Nope.
You would think someone would invent that there would be a combination.
Well, there you go, Scott.
I just suggested it to
thousands
of people out there.
You could do like disco lighting, so. Put your disco pants back on. I don't know.
That's right. Let's go to Cynthia, who's from Philadelphia. Cynthia, you're on the air.
Hi there. I'm trying to restore and upgrade a lawn that was a mix of, I assume, grass. I don't know what kind. I didn't plant it. And zoysia. The zoysia has not succeeded very well.
Good.
And so I would like very much to fill in bare spots with something that is not only going to come back, but might be actually useful to wildlife. But I'm not sure about perennial grasses. Is there any point to planting perennial grasses? Let me rephrase that. I understand that some grasses are useful for wildlife. Some grasses can be eaten by wildlife. But is there any point to planting those if you're going to mow? Or do those only help the wildlife if you're going to leave them to grow and go to seed head by themselves?
Exactly. That's the ticket. Like those kind of seeds are providing seeds, food for birds and things like that. What you could do though, first of all, get rid of the zoysia grass. Like if you can and strip it, you know, wherever you see that it is. That's invasive. It'll go into your neighbor's property. It's, you know, for 6 months out of the year, it's brown. It's not even green, so it's not very attractive. And then what you can do is depending on if you have a sun a sunny lawn or a shady lawn, you can get your sunshade mix. And to help a pollinator, since you're minded in that way, you could also get clover seeds and mix in for the pollinators. And clover is great. It pulls nitrogen out of the air. It fertilizes your soil, which then fertilizes your lawn as well.
Mm. Hey, okay. Cynthia, where in the city do you live?
I'm downtown, but the lawn that I'm thinking of is actually in Maryland near the shore.
Okay.
Gets a lot of sun.
Oh yeah.
I have another lawn that I'm responsible for that's basically just weeds. Mm-hmm. It used to be rye, and I would love to restore the rye grass.
Well, you can start with a soil test.
I thought that fed people.
Yes.
That fed the wildlife.
Yeah, start with a soil test so you can tell why the other lawn is so weedy. Weeds are opportunistic, so if your grass isn't doing well, it could be that your pH has dropped too low, or maybe it needs aerated. Lawn restoration is like such a its own thing.
Yeah. Hey, Cynthia, thank you very much for your call. You know, I always wonder, she said down near the shore. You know, when you get near the shore, mm-hmm. you always see more sand. And I always wondered if it's more difficult. I mean, you know about Jersey tomatoes and things mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's different soil than we have
here
in Pennsylvania.
It does make a big difference. With the sand, you know, depending on how much it's rained or not, like it can, the way that it drains is completely different. The plants that are going to like to be in that, when it's hot, the sand is like a hotter thing than our earth, like mm-hmm. our soil. Up here is, so the roots have to be able to withstand that. So as you go down, you'll start to see plants that are thriving and notice ones that aren't. So that's kind of information. It's like, oh, look at all those crazy, awesome crepe myrtles. Mm. And yet at the same time, I've not seen any good-looking rhododendrons. Mm. You know, that sort of a thing.
Let's take a call from Harold in Rutherford Heights. Harold, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
And thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I have a question about a bean plant that and vine that a neighbor gave me. It's purple. The stems are purple.
Hyacinth
everything
bean.
About it's purple. The flowers that come on it are like a bright mauve kind of pinkish purple color. And it produces these bean pods. And I just wondered if they are edible, like regular bean pods that you plant. Would they be something one could eat? I didn't want to take a chance because you've already mentioned different things that are poisonous plants.
Yeah, no, that's an ornamental. That, and it's so super cool because it gets bright purple bean pods on it. It's a completely different, neat vine that you can have in your garden. And no, it's ornamental.
It grows ferociously.
Yep,
it
does.
I have it on a cable, an ugly cable that comes down from a telephone pole.
Yep.
That I just wanted to disguise the stupid cable. Well,
turned it into
it
a
not,
thing of beauty, didn't you?
When it's, you know, frost comes, it's already about 50% up the way of that cable.
Yeah, and I bet you're looking gorgeous. That attracts
like,
hummingbirds too, doesn't
10
it?
10 feet or more.
Yeah.
Did you see hummingbirds on it? Because usually the hummingbirds like those flowers too.
I didn't notice it, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to pay attention to that too because I like the birds as well.
Beautiful. Thank
we
you.
We have lots of birds out here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for your call. Let's take a call from Scott in Harrisburg. Scott, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, I have an unruly spirea, as they tend to be.
Mm.
The people I bought my house from put this in the tiny little garden plot that is the front yard here in the city. And I've thinned it out throughout the years, but I'm ready to give it a severe haircut. And I'm wondering how severe I can do before I do any damage to it.
Okay, so you can go down to about 6 inches. It would be rejuvenation pruning, and I'm going to offer you another suggestion that if you're going to be spending that much time on that type of a plant in such a sweet little intimate garden, that this would be a time to also consider replacing it with something you like better. That plant was whoever you bought the house from, and now it's your house.
It's the wrong plant for the wrong place.
Exactly,
for sure.
So you didn't keep their couch, so you don't have to keep their spirea.
You didn't keep their couch, did you, Scott?
I know. Whoops. So you could use it as an opportunity to like choose something new.
Yeah.
I could. All right. Maybe I'll come over and see you.
Awesome.
All right, Scott.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your call. We had a Sharon must have tuned in a little bit late to ask if dandelions are good for lawns, but and whether they attract pollinators.
Yes.
But I also wanted to follow up on something that you mentioned to one of our callers a few minutes ago, clover. Clover is one of those things that many people try to kill in their lawns.
I know. It's ridiculous, isn't it? So apparently the man who invented 2,4-D, which is the weed killer that I'm just going to say also is known to cause cancer in dogs. So when you're putting all these chemicals on your lawns, know that. And it's being, they're looking at what it's doing to us as humans. So the man who invented that actually publicly apologized that it also killed clover, because clover used to be a sign of a good lawn. Because again, it pulls nitrogen out of the air and puts it in the soil. So what we do is we kill our clover and we go by nitrogen. The great American manipulation, baby.
Hey, we're out of time. Erica, it's always fun.
Yes, Scott, thank you.
Where are we going to post, where can we post
the recipe? I can give it to whoever posts
on
Facebook.
Okay, and we'll put it on our website.
For the pesto, yeah, so you guys can use your weeds to make food.
Yeah.
Only if you're organic.
By the way, I'm told here that we are getting photographs for WITF's website, so go to WITF.org and send some or check out everyone else's. Erica Jo Schaefer is the nursery manager at Highland Gardens. Gardens in Camp Hill. Erica Jo, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Coming up on Monday's program, we're going to be talking a little bit more about the election the day before.